How now, brown? Let's exercise a little bit. It's been a while.
How now, brown cow.
Hello.
Unique.
Hello,
New York.
Unique.
New York.
New York.
Hello, Governor.
Our human torch. Our human torch was denied.
Arsonist has oddly shaped feet.
I got caught shoplifting at the Sherry deal.
Cats. I like dogs.
You do like dogs.
Yes.
In 5, 4, 3.
Post-midterm election analysis, the complex question of should all people vote, and Boy Scouts becoming Scouts BSA. This and more on episode 31 of A Podcast Without a Name. Hello, hello, everybody.
Welcome to episode 31 of the podcast without a name. We're still alive. We're here.
Hello.
We are here. Yeah.
Rich, Anthony,
I mean,
Joe.
It's been a little bit.
It's been a few weeks, if not.
Few years.
Months. Decades
even. It's been a
decade
or so.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. Here we are.
Good to hear from you guys.
Yeah, yeah. No technical difficulties yet. Knock on the microphone.
Why would you even say that?
I don't even know why I said that. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's dive right in. There's a lot to talk about. So we're going to dive into the typical stuff real quick. What are we drinking? I have two things on tap on bottles this evening. I have a Sam Adams Boston Lager, and I have...
Classic.
Well, my wife hates when I do this, but I am drinking her beer. It's the Flying Dog Raging Bitch.
I do like the Raging Bitch. That's a good beer.
Yeah, the Belgian IPA. It's a good one. And I think I've played out that joke with my wife because my father-in-law always has that beer at his house. I'm like, I'll get one of my wife's beers. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, the Raging Bitch. You know, like, anyway. Yeah, both of them. Okay, Rich, what are you
dad
drinking?
Jokes.
Anything?
Zing, Schmidt Dogs.
Schmidt Dogs? I thought you were going to say Zima for a second.
No, Schmidt. 16-ounce, brewed in America, delicious Schmidt's beer. It's a picture of a pheasant on the can. It's great.
That sounds good. You really sold that to me, Richard.
That was good. I want one now.
It's refreshing.
Anyway.
I'm currently drinking a brew that was brewed in the city of brotherly love, the Philadelphia Pale Ale.
Oh.
Yards Brewing Company. Good stuff.
Is it really that pale of an owl?
It's quite pale.
Okay.
Quite pale.
Yes.
You know, if it's too pale, it's probably a source of all our issues in the world.
You went there, didn't you?
Yeah.
So events since the last cast.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton, right? I think over the past, you know, what, 6-8 weeks or so, we've had several moments like, oh, we really got to get on a cast, right? Like, you know, Rich is posting dissertations on the Facebook page and, you know, and we're just having all these crazy conversations in our Facebook Messenger. But there were so many things. You got the Kavanaugh confirmation. That's enough for 5 casts in itself. There was the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, all leading up to October surprises, if you will. The pipe bombs of liberal politicians and high-profile figures. These are like the October surprises. That would have been another couple podcasts. The Khashoggi murder. That's the Saudi Arabian / Washington Post U.S. law. Lawful resident that was murdered in Saudi Arabia's Istanbul consulate. That was a whole nother huge geopolitical controversy. Kanye went to the White House, had this big love fest with Trump, and then like a week ago, he says he's been misled and he's withdrawing from politics. So he went from pretty much telling the world that he loves Trump to a national or international audience, probably even. And then last week, pretty much saying, forget about it. Mueller's key findings are imminent. He announced before the midterm elections, which we'd be discussing today, that his findings are going to come out after them. He purposefully was trying to stay out of the political spotlight. I do have thoughts on that I think might be a little bit of a BS call on my part, but we could talk about some of that stuff later. Oh, yeah. Elizabeth Warren's DNA results. I'm more Native American than her, but she thinks she's a Native American. Unemployment is the lowest level since 1969. So that's kind of like the topics we've had pass us by over the past whatever amount of weeks that we decided not to podcast. Yeah, any quick comments on any of that stuff? Any particular event that maybe if we have some time, you would like to go back to tonight for whatever reason?
Just the Kanye thing real quick. You could tell, I think anybody could tell when he was talking in the White House that he was off his meds. He just wasn't making a lot of sense. So I guess he got back on the pills and Cam was like, hey, you said a lot of crazy shit.
Here's the thing. Kanye West has always said crazy stuff. And the thing that was noteworthy about this time was that he was saying crazy stuff that wasn't in line with what people expected of him or what he's previously said, like, you know, George Bush hates white people or black people. Taylor Swift didn't deserve getting something because he thought Beyonce deserved it. He was very much on that left side of all of the topics. Suddenly he comes out and he's seemingly extremely right. I mean, to whatever degree you could say that. And now he's suddenly wrong think, right? Like, no, he's always been crazy. He's always been saying crazy stuff. It's just more crazy to you because
he's
not
made a career out of it. You know what I mean? Like the guy, he loves the shock factor, which keeps him prominent in social media. You know, I mean,
I got to be honest with you.
Between him and the Kardashian, he mixes great with the Kardashians. Yeah. They just do whatever they can to stay in the spotlight.
I think he's pretty much just like a free spirit, man. Like, I honestly don't think he's doing any of this stuff for any real particular reason. I think he's really just playing like
free spirit is a word for it.
Sure.
When I think of free spirit, I don't think of Kanye. I think of
you heard him say though. They wrongly diagnosed me with bipolar, and I just had sleep deprivation. And then he was saying how in an alternate universe he was another guy, and like he has to become him and all this stuff. So he was saying some off the wall shit, like in that whole diatribe.
Drugs are bad. Okay.
I know. I think we could talk about, like, actually even listen to some of his, lectures, if you will, and pick some things apart about it, things that we might like, things that we might not like. I think this is just Kanye West being Kanye West, and people should expect that one minute he's on some sort of Trump train and another minute he's on a different train. I gotta be honest with you, there's a lot of people in the hip hop community that are upset with him with how he's come down on the Trump train. There was a lot of people upset with a lot of other African American figures that have latched onto Trump. The football player, what's his face? The old school football player. Was it Jim Brown or something? Like people like
Jim Brown.
Yeah. And so, you know, you kind of got to expect this from him, and you knew he was going to flip flop somewhere, not because for any real reason other than it's just Kanye West. He's Jesus, right? Or Yeezus.
Jesus.
Real quick, off topic completely, and before we jump into post-election analysis stuff, you guys know P. Diddy changed his name again? He's not P. Diddy anymore. He's like Love.
I can't keep
Love's
up.
Tender or something. Tender Man.
No, I can't. Yeah. I did not know this.
Hold on, I gotta find it for you.
So
I just want to know if it's
he changed his name
license.
Again.
P. Diddy's new name is. Hold on.
Oh my gosh.
Something about Brother Love. It's Brother
Love.
Oh
yeah, yeah. Brother Love or B Love. Yeah.
B Love.
B Love is an American rapper.
So he changed his name to B Love now, right? Because he had Puff Daddy, P. Diddy. I think he might have had something else there too at some point, but he's now B Love. Apparently there was like some incident with his son plays football at a D1 school and he got in like some sort of fight with his coach and he like bashed him upside the head with something. But anyway, he had this like horrible situation happen where he got out of control and he's trying to embrace
brotherly
like
love if I've ever
brother love.
It.
You know, like, he's trying to become a better person. Anyway, I just thought that was interesting. We're talking about Kanye. I wanted to take note that
Philly.
But let's talk about the post election now. So the 2018 midterms just ended yesterday at the time of us taping this. Generally speaking, everything's pretty much decided. Everything happened what people were predicting. The Democrats took the House back. They gained, I think by the end of all this, it's going to be about 34 seats in the House, which gave them the majority. And Republicans at the end is actually going to pick up a larger majority in the Senate. I think they're looking at 54 seats where I think they were going in with, what, 51 or 52. So they might end up with 55. There's still a couple races that are up in the air, but it looks like it's going to be about 54 seats. So they're going to have a stronger hold on the Senate. And the Democrats now have the majority in the House. So that's pretty much the results. I think that kind of fits in with what everyone was predicting moving forward. They were saying anywhere between 26 to 40 seats in the House the Democrats could pick up, and that the Republicans could actually gain one to four seats in the Senate. And we pretty much smack hit both projections. The polling on this go was pretty much dead on. I think, I don't know if this was like lessons learned from 2016, but polling was good. It was a somewhat uneventful night. I think early on in the evening of November 7th, there was a little bit of maybe some concern on the Democratic side. There were some early results in some areas that looked like there was a possibility of the Republicans keeping the House. That kind of faded pretty quickly. I know we were chatting a little bit about that. We were looking at the probabilities in real time, and things kind of went back to where we were expecting it to go. So, I mean, here we are, right? Post-election, we know where things are pretty much going to stand. What does this mean for Trump moving forward with the Democrats holding the House and the GOP having a stronger hold on the Senate? I have some thoughts on it. I'll let you guys go first. Whoever wants to go. How about Rich? Cut Anthony out. Sorry. But how about you, Rich? No, what do you think? Where do we go now with Trump moving forward with Dems in the House and GOP?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. Everybody's talking about them trying to subpoena his tax returns. They're going to be doing more oversight, you know, on the 2016 election. I think really got to move on from that stuff. If you're the Democrats, it's kind of a bad look. You can't focus on that because you want to get legislation passed. Now that you have control of the House, you know, the way Trump acted in the press conference today, he was saying it was a big win for the Republicans because they gained some seats in the Senate, but they did lose some seats in the House. I mean, it's kind of the way that America is. I mean, it was split pretty closely down the middle. I don't know really like what it means for Trump moving forward. I think he's probably going to end up being a lame duck president. I really don't think that that he ends up winning, you know, a second term. And I'm going to actually be interested to see, because he's so unpopular, even with the Republicans, you know, if they put him through a primary and if he doesn't struggle in a primary, you know. So I don't know. It's going to be weird. It's going to be definitely not normal moving forward. But that's what we're used to.
I mean, those are my thoughts exactly. I mean, you just hit on every single thing that I was going to say. I, you know, on a side note, I have to say that one weird thing that I felt during this election period was I was very torn in between of like what I actually wanted to happen, right? A part of me wanted to see, you know, red everywhere, basically, just to give the opportunity of all the things that he has, you know, claimed he's going to keep his word on and follow through with, to see if they could actually come into fruition. The other part of me is a fan of the checks and balances notion. You know, but one very weird feeling that I had with this whole election was I was kind of this is going to sound really dumb, but I was kind of hoping that something would happen to maybe shut social media up a little bit, because if Republicans took the House and the Senate, it was going to be unbearable for me to go on social media anymore. Yeah, so I know that should not be a driver for anything. And it definitely did not drive me in any way of how I voted. But that being said, it was in the back of my head the entire time.
So I think I have a little bit different of a take on this than both of you guys. I've been thinking, I don't want to say too deeply, but I've been reading on all the different sides of the aisle here and what everyone's saying about it. To be honest with you, I think that legislatively, I think that the Republicans probably have hit most of their kind of palatable legislative efforts, probably most notably being the tax reform and stuff like that, over the past 2 years. And I think that they can move forward going into 2020, not ruffling feathers legislatively, preparing for a Trump, 2020 run, and letting Trump kind of focus on, and a lot of people have this opinion, this is not an organic opinion of mine, but focusing on the judicial appointments that need to get through the Senate. And that the thing here is, with a stronger hold on the Senate, that's going to be, should be an easier ride for him, because the judicial nominees don't have to go through the House. It just has to go through the Senate. So that's going to be an easier ride for him. And if they're not focusing on legislative policies and things like that, then there's going to even be more focus in the Senate on getting these judicial appointees through and filling all these different important key seats around the country with probably younger conservative judges. So I think that that's going to be the focus, and it's kind of smart, because you think Republicans and Trump in particular, one of the big things that they haven't been able to achieve is repealing Obamacare to the degree that they would like to do. I don't think that's smart going into 2020. I think you want to hold things out, your major moves going into the 2020 elections. Because you want to appeal to your base to a certain degree, and I think they have enough under their belt for Trump to appeal to his base, but then he has to appeal to some sort of moderates. And if you go too far with some of the extremes with what the Republicans want to do, you're not going to be able to appeal to them. So I think it's going to be kind of a smooth sailing going forward. And at the end of the day, if people are going, why aren't we getting legislative matters done, Republicans? They're going to just turn around and go, it's because the House is disrupting things with a bunch of Democrats.
Isn't that how it always goes, though? Like, I mean, this is, this is like very common with midterm elections. And
absolutely,
the result always ends up being, I want to pass certain legislation, but I can't. Because
there's people disrupting it, right? They're not playing ball. Now, exactly. On the other hand of all this, so I know we've said this many of times, and a lot of people have said this, that Trump really isn't much of a true conservative or Republican, right? So now that he has to work with Democrats in the House, if he wants to achieve anything, don't be surprised if he starts making deals with them. There's a lot of things on his deck that really do appeal to Democrats, like infrastructure bills and stuff like that. Healthcare, pre-existing conditions, which is a kind of a popular position to be in, but that's really because it kind of goes along with the whole healthcare regulation. That's really a more Democratic policy, right? It's not necessarily a Republican deregulation type of policy. Mm. There's a bunch of things on the table that Trump has talked about. Hey, maybe legalizing marijuana. Obviously, our last podcast focused on that a lot. This could be a time for him to push that if he wants to, or someone else push it and get it to his desk. He will have a fight in the Senate for that. But, there's, don't be surprised if you see what everyone's been saying, that Trump's not a real conservative. He's going to start making deals. He makes deals. He'll tell you that, like, he's the deal maker, right? If he has to sit down at a table with the presumed Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, to get some legislation through, he's going to cut deals with them. So if
he would be good at that, right? Like that is what he's good at, right? He's good at making deals. He's good at marketing himself.
He'll deal with anyone and he'll cut a deal with anyone.
He's so unlikable to so many, though, that I don't think that'll ever turn around any voters in the future, especially for 2020.
No, he's not going to.
I don't think this will have any bearing on 2020. 2020, I feel like he's got zero chance just because of, the diminishing, approval ratings. You know what I mean? So I'm not really sure.
realize his approval ratings going into midterms were actually probably the highest he's ever had, and actually were higher than Barack Obama's at the same point in his presidency. Not many people realize that. People just think they see 47% and go, oh, that must be bad. But 47% is actually pretty on par.
Sure, yeah. But look at what that means for the following election. You know what I mean? So
2020, you're
Barack
saying?
Obama's Well, yeah. So Barack Obama's approval rating began to decline, and you had a major change over when 2016 came around. I feel like this is kind of early for that to happen, true. Especially in his first term.
And, you know, the results of yesterday, it's kind of a mixed bag, right? Like, there was no real winner or loser in all this. You know, historically, you kind of expected a change in Congress. I mean, that's just what happens in a midterm election after a new president, right? So in that regard, we didn't see that big of a change. Usually you see pretty much, in many cases, both the Senate and House flip, and sometimes huge flips. I mean, I think the Republicans got something like 60 seats or something back with Barack Obama when they flipped in, what was it, 2010 maybe? I mean, this it definitely wasn't a blue wave, right? And Democrats don't have much to necessarily be celebrating for, and Republicans can be set, you know, you could say the same things for Republicans. So, you know, if we're thinking about this from an objective, like what's kind of healthy for our country right now, I think moderates kind of have to be a little happy. You know, I mean, you got some opposition in the House, and that's not a bad thing. I think, like, a lot of people tend to think, oh, well, that means we're not going to get anything done. I get it. And in many ways that might be true. And I know you said you were interested in seeing maybe some other stuff get pushed through with both the House and Senate being read again, and seeing what that meant for the country. And I get that too. I think that there would be something to be said about that happening. But at the end of the day, if this makes Trump have to come to the table and work with Democrats on some legislation, depending on how far he's willing to go, that could be a good thing. I think we can maybe focus on some things like, listen, I don't personally think an infrastructure thing is a bad thing. I wouldn't mind seeing some sort of infrastructure. Like, I do think that's something that a lot of people can get behind. It's a very kind of populist opinion. Like, look at our interstate highway system. Granted, it was a war thing, right? It was meant to be able to move, troops and equipment throughout the country in case there's some sort of invasion. However, it did create something that was very positive for the economy in the long run, right? We have this interconnected city interstate system that really enabled commerce at post World War II, I think. I forget, or was it World War I? I forget which war. One of the world wars. And so there could be good things that come of this, right? I don't think it's a terrible thing that it's a mixed bag result.
Go on.
Well, the one thing that I would say sucks about being past the 2008 midterm election is, now day one, November 8th, it's now the beginning of the 2020 campaigns, which means now we have to go through another election cycle pretty much immediately, which can be very exhausting, in my opinion.
It's been exhausting. And honestly, this entire, 2016 through now has been exhausting. I felt that maybe it would die down over the years. I mean, obviously coming into the midterm elections, you expect it to ramp back up, but it's been somewhat insufferable for the past 2 years as far as rhetoric goes around, politics just in general. And it's the most I've ever seen. Now, I mean, we all know that it gets heated every now and then. I mean, years ago we had the vote or die, campaign, and it was yeah, pretty similar then with how how heated and how but even with that, I mean,
vote or die,
I don't know if that many more people are actually coming out to vote from then or from any other time than now. So I'm curious to know, do you think that with all of this attention around politics and all this attention around voting and midterms and everything like that, where you have these people that, want to create waves, let's say, do you think that 2020 we would have a higher voter turnout?
Oh, well, you know what? We had record voter turnout for here. I think we had something like 47% voter turnout for a midterm election. That is somewhat unprecedented. Now, that could be very predictable. And if we would have been able to have if we had our post or pre-election special, that's the one thing I would have pointed out. I was going to say, listen, we're going to have crazy turnout because the Democrats are full force getting people to come out. And I think it's being matched almost equally by conservatives. So I think we're going to continue to have a higher trends of voter turnout. And I think a lot of that is like that's this is maybe and maybe in our next topic, we could talk about this. This could either be a positive externality of social media, or if you're, you kind of ascribe to Socrates and his view of democracy, that could be a negative externality to social media. So, I mean, I don't know. I think moving forward, things are going to get pretty interesting. I don't think that the results here really say too much for 2020 right now. I don't think we could really, if anything, because we didn't see a big blue wave, if anything, I think we come away from the midterms thinking that Trump has a better chance than he probably could have had if there was a blue wave. If there was a blue wave, I would tell you 2020 was completely out of the question for him. This was not a blue wave. It was like a blue drizzle that like splashed a little bit on a puddle, and that was kind of it. And so you got to think Trump has just as good a chance in 2020 that he did in 2016, depending on who the Democrats decide to field. That's crazy. That's the big question.
If or a big who? No, I was just going to say, well, to piggyback on what you were saying, I can't really think of anybody right now that's so incredibly popular on the Democratic side that would really change anybody who's somebody that just votes down ticket, you know, everything Republican, how it's going to change your minds. I don't see like really a charismatic leader over there. No. Is it Cory Booker?
No. Not Spartacus. You know?
But other than that, too, there was another point. Oh, yeah. Just because more people turned out to vote, like, did it necessarily mean that it was more people? Did more people pay attention to the issues, or did more people just go, well, press the red button, press the blue button? Like orange man bad, anything blue is good.
On that note, yeah, on social media, I mean, like everywhere I went was vote, vote, vote. Everybody go out to vote, use this opportunity to vote, and like hashtag vote Democrat. You know what I mean? Like it was kind of like everybody go out and vote, but only if you're going to vote for what I want you to vote. And like, you know, I there's a little bit of a hypocrisy built into that, obviously. But, you know, what does that mean in terms of, you know, we saw what the turnout was here for the midterms. And yeah, it was pretty extravagant, I guess you could say, in terms of, you know, relative to other midterm elections in the past, you know, but with it being as heated as it was, I mean, even with the last major election with national election with Trump being, becoming president, you had, I think it was a 56% voter turnout. And I think Obama's second term was a 57% turnout. Like it wasn't all that much more. I feel like it just kind of goes around that, you know, 50 to 60% rate for like a national election. I don't know that that's really going to change that much, no matter how much people say vote, 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 because really, all the campaigns behind voting more are usually for the same people that are emotionally charged voters in the first place. You know what I mean? So, you know, I wonder how much of the, I'd love to see, and I'm sure it exists out there. I don't know it. I'd love to see the statistic of the, you know, other 40 to 45% of non-voters that are eligible to vote. What is the breakdown as far as what they're registered for? You know what I mean? What would that actually mean in terms of a national election?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to say. I mean, I know myself, I voted for governor and for Senate. I voted for the Libertarian candidates because I don't really feel like, the Democrats or the Republicans really
You're
addressing
just
my
be a slave to those
my needs.
Who voted.
So yeah. I think, I mean, this is a really interesting topic, and it's obviously a very good segue into something I want to talk about, which is should be everyone be voting as like a civil civil discourse, your civil obligation as a citizen. You're right, because it becomes a situation where it's like people are just voting to vote, and people are being kind of like shamed into voting, and like you know, I just want to lay it out there. There's a lot of things that people don't understand about voting. Even like I told my wife, I was like, listen, you're going to get, cause I voted early. Right. So I mean, and they also send the ballots out to you, but I voted early and I'm a very kind of like, almost like what you were just saying, Rich, like I'm very like, I like to have control over my ballot, right? Like I'm not just going to vote because there's something on there that I have to vote for. I won't fill circles in. Like, or if there's something like a local race where it's like pick four, well, it's like, I'm going to purposely split my vote because I don't want all four Democrats or all four Republicans. Like I'm going to pick two or two of one or two of the other, or depending on the options, like, you know, maybe throw another party in there. But, the one thing I told my wife was like, don't feel like you have to fill in a circle for every single thing on that ballot. And in particular, there's a lot of referendums and like things like, state constitutional amendment. And then there's a paragraph and it's like, what the F does this all mean? It's like, if you read that and you don't understand it, don't put anything in. It's okay. Right. There's nothing like, in my opinion, it's better to not put something in than to put something in that you might be hurting yourself doing. Like, well, you don't like, I just put an amendment to raise my taxes 20% just because I have, a green sweater that I wear on Sundays. Like, I don't know. Like,
you know, it plays into how people vote. Right. So the non-educated voter. So you're an educated voter. OK, a non-educated voter is going to go into it saying, I'm going to go in and I'm going to vote blue on everything. You know what I mean? Or red on everything. And that's all I'm going to do because fuck Trump or whatever it might be. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the reasoning behind it. And that's what is motivating them to even go out in the first place. So, you know, in my eyes, as long as voters are there to only vote based on their party, you know, that sports team mentality we always talk about, you know, this is like a big fantasy football game. You know, I don't know that those people should be voting in that manner, but they also have that right to do so. They have the ability to educate themselves, and really whether or not they're educated, quote unquote, enough to vote is kind of a relative, you know, and kind of an ambiguous idea, right? Yeah. I mean, it's who is to judge who is good
enough
it's
something you can't achieve, right? You're never gonna be able to really achieve, right? Like who is, you know, not giving someone a test, right? Yeah. And here's the thing. It's like, I get where like, we have like a little bit of a responsibility as a U.S. citizen and to partake in our democratic republic that we are. And, you know, and participate in these things. But I think we have a responsibility just slightly beyond just pulling that lever, right? Like, I think we do all have a responsibility to at least give some sort of attention to who we're voting for and why we're voting for them, right? And if not for any other reason but to keep your politicians honest. And I don't, you know, maybe in a perfect world, I'm probably like, you know, apple pie in the sky, rainbows and butterflies, right? But in a perfect world, we'd all kind of go into an election and go, I want to hold certain people accountable. I'm going to keep them on their toes. And we're not going to be intimidated or scared to potentially vote for someone maybe we wouldn't traditionally vote for, just to keep the people that we kind of do typically vote for honest. Like, I don't mind going in there and voting for someone that I probably wouldn't traditionally vote for, just to keep the other party honest. And I say that because I know that next election I'll have an opportunity to change my vote, right? And sometimes people get really scared, right? Every election cycle, you'll have people saying, oh, this is the biggest election. Oh, my God, this is it. I mean, this is, if you vote one way, it's the end of democracy. I think Bill Maher actually said that about this midterm election. Like, come on, dude. That's like hyperbole to the fullest. Our system is set up that not one election, whether it's a general election or a midterm, is never going to change the course of our whole democracy, like our whole country. We have checks and balances on top of that, right? So it's like this idea that, you know, we got to go in there and we got to vote Democrat, we got to vote Republican, because otherwise man, like, whoo, we're going to lose our democracy. We're going to be all fascists. And we're going to, next thing you know, we're throwing people in toaster ovens or something. Like, no, it's just not going to happen. And if you think that's going to happen, if you're buying into that, then, hey, man, you got some education to do on our political system and our democracy and our constitution. You know, like, that's just not going to happen.
Well, do you think some of this is like a bottom up sort of a thing? Like, do you think that maybe politicians right now notice that people are so swayed by social media and that they're only reading headlines of articles and things like that, that they don't really talk that much about issues because they know that that doesn't matter. They just have to seem exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a popularity contest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So because that's really, and I hate to keep bringing up stuff like Facebook. Maybe I spend too much time on there, but if you could get kind of a good thumb on the pulse of what's going on when you go on there, because if you go to the comment section of any news article, you can tell that there's the majority of the people did not read the article at all. And right away it's like, you know, vote blue or you know, the bigots win, or, you know, if you're a woman, you know, there's only one way to vote. You know, the other side hates you, or, you know, has some kind of a thing against your body, or it's really kind of degraded into that. And I wonder if it's because they're always taking polls and things like that. So do they just know, wow, the most of these voters are stupid? You know, they're more concerned with their Twitter feed than like actually going and reading about stuff. So we just have to say stuff that's Twitter friendly and we'll get elected.
I think the core of each party, whether like the Democratic National Committee and the GOP, like the actual core establishment strategists and like publicists and such, they think about that stuff and they realize how superficial this stuff can be. I think the politicians themselves might be actually part of it all. Like, they might be just as dumb and stupid as their constituents anyway. So I don't want to give them, I don't want to give the actual politicians too much credit. I don't want to say, man, they're so nuanced in how they think that they know these people are just going to fall for this when they post this or do that, right? I think that you're just part of it and they're going with it and they're being like, you know, they're just kind of like very superficial with it. But I think that the core of these parties, like, you know, like the people, like the chairman of the DNC or something like that, like those groups, I think, like they think about that and they break that stuff down. They do that type of market research. They realize that there's very naive people out there and they could take advantage of them. And they might phrase it in a way that doesn't sound as bad as taking advantage of. They'll throw some marketing terms around it. But, you know, I think that that's kind of how it goes. I think the politicians themselves are actually just a part of it all. They're just in the mix. They're just kind of like, you know, the face of it, and they're not necessarily the brains of it all.
You can see how the campaigns are positioned. I mean, we all know that all the campaigns are always just talk about the negatives of the other person, right? So everybody's an awful person. That caters to the uneducated voter, right? Because they have nothing else to base their vote on other than what's bad about the other person, right? Who's the better evil, I guess, you know what I mean? And that's what they're pushed to vote with, right? Vote against or vote for. So the people that are actually educating themselves, both Democrat and Republican, are going to look at certain things that they align with, whether it be social issues or fiscal issues. You know, one of the issues that I have with the rhetoric that surrounds social media and everything like that when it comes to voting is, you know, it's either Republican or Democrat. We've talked about this before, about you could be socially liberal and you could be fiscally conservative and vice versa. You know, you vote for what matters to you, right? Do I want a president or a house or whatever that's going to be great for social issues, or do I want somebody that's going to be great for fiscal issues, right? You kind of have to choose between the two. I feel like people that are out there and looking at all of the issues as a whole and kind of trying to pick the best combination are going to vote properly. And those who are just voting based on, oh, you know, they said that Trump's really bad, or, you know, Hillary emails, or, you know, whatever it might be, those people are, you know, less inclined to vote with an educated mind and more prone to vote for, well, who's the better person? You know, who seems like the better human being, I guess.
So this, well, this creates, sorry, Rich, real quick. I want to make a point.
Oh, no, no, go ahead.
This creates a somewhat of a vicious cycle, because if you're looking at this from a strategist perspective, right, maybe you're sitting in the DNC strategy room and you're going, what are we going to do for 2020? Well, we got to take advantage. We got to get our base, or the, which is pretty much what we're talking about, the base of people who are always going to vote one way because that's what they've always voted for whatever reason, right? We got to get them to come out and vote, right? So we got to touch, we got to tug at their heartstrings, we got to poke at them, we got to get them to feel emotional enough and attach to this election to actually get out off their couches, get to the voting poll and vote, right? So so that's the DNC strategizing, and then you have the GOP strategizing, well, the RNC, and they're going, we got to get our base out there, we got to tug at their heartstrings, we got to get the, we got to poke at what they care about to get them off their couch to go out and vote. So they're both having the strategy, and I would argue that for every uninformed voter, generally there's going to be an offsetting uninformed voter on the other side. So what it comes down to is, it comes down to which party is able to get the most uninformed voters out, right, and offset the other side's uninformed voter, and then maybe supersede their uninformed voters to actually have a net gain. And the vicious cycle there is the hyperbole that goes into getting each side's own people to come out to vote becomes like the shit show of just bullshit. And that's like the problem with the politics. So it becomes like this race to the bottom when it comes to, well, like, even how many voters, like, do we get?
Yeah. And I mean, even with the campaigns that go aside, right, parallel with the campaigns themselves. So, like, you know, in this case, the vote, 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 or like vote or die of the past, right? Those campaigns that the celebrities bring up and things like that, I feel like they should be less about vote, 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 vote Democrat, vote Republican, and more about, hey, why don't you guys start educate or die. Get yourself educated. You know what I mean? Get, read about everything. And it'll never happen. But you know what? If they made this more of a point, you know, made this more of a thing where, hey, it's a fad, it's cool to educate yourself and be able to talk you know, about politics in a educated manner and not just throw out things that you hear on the news all day. You know, I feel like, and this will obviously be more for the younger generations who are more apt to do this type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, obviously your older voters are going to vote based on their previous life experiences and what they've known their whole life, what they were brought up as, you know what I mean? But like the new generation, I feel like there are situations. I know a few people who have totally changed their side, their party, over the course of the past few years, just based on rhetoric that they've seen and the idea that they wanted to go out and educate themselves a little bit more because they weren't understanding, what people were really complaining about. You know what I mean? And if there was a little bit more of that and a little bit more of a push on that, maybe we would see there. It's impossible for us to ever know whether or not you have an educated or uneducated, politically educated or uneducated person voting. It's impossible for us to ever see that or make that a tangible, you know, a statistic. But if we were able to maybe get in the heads of some of the younger people that are prone to try to educate themselves and maybe make it a fad of not to listen to just the propaganda rhetoric that surrounds politics all the time, as it has since forever, maybe we would see a little bit of a different type of potentially candidates that are actually coming up in the primaries. You know what I mean? Maybe we'd have actual better candidates, you know what I mean, to vote for. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's hopeful thinking.
Well, the whole thing is, though, the people that are of voting age, like 18 plus, like the place that they're being educated about this kind of stuff is in college. And we know universities pretty much are very left-leaning. It's like echo chambers of the left. And so I really don't know how you're going to get intellectualism to be a cool thing to benefit both sides when it seems like the one side that has control of the institutions of learning, you know, is the left. You know, you saw today too with the reporters going against Trump. You know, who goes to school for journalism? There's not too many Republicans that probably do that. You know, and you had a bunch of people today screaming things at him. I heard you hate the Jews, President. How do you, could you have a comment on that? I heard you say, Little John said you called him Uncle Tom once. What do you have to say? It was just people screaming a bunch of crazy questions at him the whole time.
So much journalism going on there, huh?
Yeah, I think you really,
American
what happened to, asking about policy and then waiting for an answer, not talking over the person giving the answer? I know he's not a likable person, but the way he was treated today, I almost felt bad for him, you know, and I'm sure a lot of other people did too.
In courts, in the court of law, right, when you have a defendant and a prosecutor, right, and you're talking about something that's going to affect a certain individual's life, right, any bullshit that is aside from any of the facts is thrown away, right? You're not allowed to talk about it.
This isn't the court of law, Anthony.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying is during these campaigns and during, you know, not just the campaigns, but even when they have their debates and things like that, is there any way possible that they can somehow enforce a way to, hey, look, you're only allowed to talk about policies and policies only, your policies, what you're going to do?
No, but the problem
that are
there
prevalent
is,
to what's going on and not anything else.
The problem there is you're alluding to some sort of like legislation or some sort of law that would say, hey, in these particular circumstances, you can only keep it to certain topics or certain facts or something, right? And there's always going to be some ambiguity. Okay, who defines what the facts are, right? So what it comes down to is a free speech issue and a First Amendment issue. But everything seems to come down to that, because what we're just talking about, what Rich was saying on campuses and how do we break through that type of stuff? How do we get people out of echo chambers? This is why the free speech movement right now, which is kind of something that the intellectual dark web has been kind of formed around, is really important. Like this idea that someone like Ben Shapiro would go to a college and have to have 600 police officers protect him from Antifa stopping him from talking, or just a random, whether Jordan Peterson or something that's trying to have some sort of invited lecture, that they people stand up and yell shame, 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 and try to drown him out so he can't talk. That stuff right there, that's fascism. That's what's going to make us go in the wrong direction. These people need to be allowed to have their voice on campuses, because that's the only way, in many cases, that's the only voice on a campus that might show an opposing opinion to what's typically being talked about on that campus. So if we allow people to chill free speech, like, and this is why, like, you know, we get so concerned over free speech, and everyone goes, well, it's a private entity. The First Amendment doesn't apply. And they're correct. Many ways, like, private companies can do what they want, right? And this is, I think we talked about this in one of our podcasts, but like, I think the bigger issue nowadays, like it used to be government, you know, is, you know, you don't want them to stifle free speech, right? Like you have to have the Constitution to stop it, right? And freedom of religion and everything, right? But now it's becoming that the government isn't the biggest threat here. It's actually social media. And in many ways, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist here, but big tech is in control of a lot of the way we communicate right now.
Yeah,
really, they're not government entities. They're not bound by the Constitution of the United States of America. So if our platforms for which we use to vocalize our speech are all virtual and on the internet and owned by private companies, free speech is no more. I mean, I could go outside and scream as loud as I want. The only thing that's going to happen is someone's going to call the police and say, tell them to shut the F up.
I've always felt that politics follows the same sort of like hemostasis, like that same sort of like ebb and flow, balancing out of itself, where it constantly goes back and forth and tries to find balance, right? And the scales always tip one way or another, and they're going to constantly go back and forth for the end of time, right? And I feel like social media has basically just accelerated that back and forth. You know, what breaks that mold? What breaks that consistent back and forth that we have, where we're just kind of waiting for that next step and that next ebb or flow to happen, rather than just have, you know, something that's completely exclusive to past presidencies and exclusive to, you know, past voter trends. You know what I mean? Like, we have a situation where there is no, there, we don't vote, and our political system doesn't just act on, you know, what's happening at the time or what we want to pick on at the time. It's, you know, we're really sick of this side, so now we're going to kind of go on this side and we want to change. And then that doesn't work for a while, and now we're going to vote on the other side because we want change, you know, and it kind of goes back and forth. And I feel like that really has to do with the fact that what's really true and what's really the honest campaign and what's the honest idealisms that these candidates have are never actually portrayed. So nobody has any tangible, you know, footing to vote on. They vote based on what they're tired of and past precedents that they formed in their own head. You know what I mean? And I feel like all that creates is a situation where from now until the end of time, we're just going to have an ebb and flow back and forth and never actually have any sort of real, I don't know, like tangible voting process, right? I mean, I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys, but
I think I'm following what you're saying. I think, you know, we talk about, I just kind of shit on big tech and social media, but I think on the other side of that, what we're talking about here is communication and how that's come along. And we saw this in financial markets, you know, before technology, before even the telegraph or anything, like markets moved very slowly and business cycles were long and deep. And then technology comes along and we have better ways of communicating and business cycles become more frequent and sometimes they got higher and deeper, but then they leveled out. And so in many ways, communication has kind of normalized the markets in that regard. We're having, you know, shallower recessions and we're not having great depressions anymore, or at least hopefully we won't. So I think in terms of voting, I think we have a similar thing with communication here, or not just voting, but just general like political discourse. I think for a long period of time, because of a lack of communication and technology, the power was very centralized and very few people knew what was going on. And the information wasn't flowing very freely. And we kind of went through this technology revolution, you know, pretty much starting with the printing press, right? Like even then it started, right? Where now information's moving much faster and people are able to, you know, kind of, I don't want to say process, but at least have access to and are exposed to more and more data, higher rates and more frequently. Where I think right now is with the internet and social media, we've kind of hit, I don't want to say we've hit peak information flow, because there's always ways to increase bandwidth to humans. And we could talk some of those cool ideas later. But I think at some point we're going to have this like self-actualization, if you will, or we're going to hit some sort of level of intelligence or something where we're able to kind of look back and really examine, hopefully in a very pragmatic and, you know, scientific or quantitative and qualitative way to go and say, okay, now we have all this information in front of us. Perhaps we're doing some things wrong here because we want to make sure we're doing this right. And I think this kind of goes into evolutional biology even. Like I think humans just have a natural tendency to go in that direction. And that's kind of a contrarian position right now, because a lot of people think we're moving in a direction where we're all just going to kind of mold into one thought at some point. Like, and it's going to be like this very like dark place where like if you're not within the in group, you're going to be shunned and all that stuff. But I think we're going to have a lot of self-actualization and almost hindsight's 2020 kind of moments and go, wow, why were we doing it this way all these years? That was such bad like science or bad thought, or I don't want to say bad thought, but a bad practice and methods. This, like, I think there's going to be a lot of that moving forward, because I do see little inklings here and there of small groups of people, and I think the intellectual dark web might actually be a good example of this, where you have groups of people from very different backgrounds and very different political beginnings, and they're coming to common ground over very core principles. And they'll disagree on a lot of them, but what holds them together is that core principle. And with the dark web, it's the idea that we must be able to express ourselves in a free way, where we could have an exchange of ideas and not worry about being kind of like shunned or someone trying to shut us down. I think that that's an interesting group forming there, and an interesting idea that's forming. And it's not a new idea. It's not in any way, shape, or form. It shouldn't be even. But it's kind of almost like a renaissance, if you will. Like, it's a very simple concept that's bringing these people that are from very different places and very different schools of thought together. Like, Jordan Peterson has no business being on stage, in reality, being on stage with someone like Sam Harris or Ben Shapiro, even. Like, they don't really necessarily, in a traditional sense, and especially in today's climate, you would think that they would be on the same stage and be best pals. And they'll have a debate, and the debate will be pretty much like immovable. Like, they might be on further parts of the spectrum, but they'll walk off that stage actually liking each other even more because of it, right? Not hating each other even more. And I think that that's where we're going. I think there's a dark view moving forward, and then there's a optimistic view. And I think the optimistic view is really what we're moving towards. And I think we're just starting to become, we're starting to learn how to deal with social media. We're starting to learn how to deal with this rapid movement of information, and how do we process it? Maybe curating things are not the best thing, because when you curate, that means you're just giving stuff that you already like, right? And let's be real, that's going to get old for people. Like, I think about something that you do every day, the same thing over and over again. Like, that gets old. You people just naturally want change. And I think that echo chamber is going to get old for a lot of people. And I know, I mean, we see it already. We're already sick of it, right? I mean, we've been sick of it, but other people are going to get sick of it too. And I think I see that more and more on my social media feed. Like, there's still like very partisan people there, and there's some people that are always going to be like that, but I'm seeing more and more people that are getting sick of the partisanship. Well,
I can kind of see people getting tired of complaining or tired of arguing about certain things, and then they take a little break and then they ramp it up again. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't feel like it ever actually goes away. That echo chamber will always exist.
There's going to be something.
It has existed forever. I mean, for the last century, it's existed that way. You know, so it doesn't really.
It was geographical before technology. It was geographical, right? Like, you go to a town, and everyone in a town thought the same way. Like,
but, you know, it's funny because right now, like, when you look at the people that are very emotionally charged about voting and who they're voting for, and politics in general, it almost seems like they feel like right now is the dawn of a new day. This is brand new. This is an issue. This was never an issue before. We're going to start a revolution. Like, it's some sort of like brand new idea. You know what I mean? This is the same thing that's been going on for over a century, and it will continue on for another century. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't anything new. You know, these people aren't coming up with any new ideas of propaganda or anything like that. I mean, if you look at propaganda from the 20s, it probably looks very similar to what it looks like in the 20s of this century. You know what I mean? So, like, it's interesting to see that. And I've noticed that, like, you know, on my social media feed, at least, that they really feel that this is like a new revolution that they're going to start, and they're going to change the game for all generations to come. And that's a load of bullshit.
Well, you know, there it is. Hey, listen, I know we were supposed to get to the Boy Scout thing. we've hit a bit, you know, we're going on about an hour. Do you want to touch on the Boy Scout thing real quick, Anthony and Rich? I know you guys were very interested in that.
I just thought it was extremely ironic that, yeah. I mean, I've actually never seen something so ironic come up on my news feed before, that there was so much liberal attention to wanting the Boy Scouts of America to be inclusive to both genders, and then you have the Girl Scouts sue them for it. It's amazing.
I think it was kind of predictable.
It's the true, like, if there was a definition, it's the true definition of you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, period.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, it was kind of inevitable. Like, the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts are different entities. They're different enterprises, and they have different interests to survive as an entity and make money or raise funds. And for the Boy Scouts to be kind of strong-armed into becoming pretty much all Scouts, you knew the Girl Scouts were going to suffer from it. And in many ways, it's like, this is like turning back on them, because I don't know the history of the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but my guess is one of them existed before the other. And maybe one of them was like, well, they got the Boy Scouts, we're going to be the Girl Scouts. And it was kind of a natural, like, well, I'm a boy, I'm going to be a Boy Scout. I'm going to be a girl, I'm going to be a Girl Scout. So it kind of benefited each. Like, it kind of slid into your gender. And it was like, so once the gender went away, the stronger organization is going to win out, the bottom line. And the Boy Scouts have probably the larger presence and the bigger history, or larger history, probably for the wrong reasons, maybe. But
I was somewhat surprised by the lawsuit. I mean, I kind of thought that maybe
they have no choice, because
I thought that maybe they would try to, you know, either assimilate with the same notion or try to do some sort of like merge.
The thing you're not thinking about here is, this is a trademark and branding thing, and legally they have a requirement to enforce their branding and trademarking, right? They can't pick and choose, because if they pick and choose when there's a real issue, like let's say there's something that's actually a bigger pressing issue that they think the evidence against that their case is going to be, well, you're picking and choosing how you're enforcing your trademark and your branding. So why are you choosing me, right? So there's a legal standard that has to be met, where they have to defend their marketing, otherwise they're weakening themselves, because the court's going to go, well, why'd you pick this battle? Why are you picking this battle but not the other battle? They're both infringing on your trademark, and there's a argument to be had there. So it's like, music just stopped, but. So they are almost so strong-armed into doing this. They once the Boy Scouts drop the boys, and it's starting to take away, if there's some sort of material way of quantifying that they're losing membership, they almost have a legal requirement, if they ever want to enforce their trademark and branding in the court at all, they have a requirement to do that. They have to. It's just how the game is played in trademarking and branding and copywriting and stuff like that. It's just how the game's played.
Girl Scouts, but it's true. It is very ironic. Stick to cookies. They're delicious.
They do make good cookies. And
what else do they suspect?
Nobody wants to see those go away. Yeah. Nobody wants to see that go away. Nobody.
No one wants the Girl Scout cookies to go away. I mean, that's good. I mean, we had a little discussion there about the Boy Scout situation and the Girl Scout of America situation. It is very ironic. I think it is an interesting thing that we had. I think it was a little bit predictable. But I think it's also very interesting.
So what are they going to have to do? Put Boy Man back on their name? If that lawsuit goes to, you know, if they win the lawsuit?
It's conceivable that a judge might require them to put Boy back into their branding. It's conceivable. So that would be interesting. And perhaps it's the way they wanted to go to begin with, right?
You can't assume gender identity.
No, it's not nice. So. Anyway, I think that's episode 31 of the podcast Without a Name. Long time coming. It was a good one. I think we could have talked forever, probably because we waited so long to have one. But it was good. I think we might want to come back and talk about a couple things. I think we want to talk about the Kavanaugh stuff. I think we want to talk about pipe bombs.
I want to talk a little bit more about the unemployment being the lowest in basically 50 years.
I want to talk about the unemployment. I think I want to talk about being Native American or not. There's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. So, you know, we'll have to get on here again and cover some of these topics. We'll try our best to not put so much time in between these podcasts. A lot of stuff going on. I get it. Whether it's we're sick or things come up, it happens. But we are the podcast without a name. Oh, by the way, we are working on some new branding of our own, which we will have to talk about offline. But don't be surprised if sometime soon we have a little bit of a branding switch, maybe a little bit of a format switch. I think it'll be for the best. I think it'll end up being more entertaining, a more structured, and
awesome.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. But keep an eye out for that.
Things to look forward to. It's going to be very cool. Very good.
We're just over an hour here. I don't know if Melissa still listens to us, but she would be very upset right now.
She started her own podcast. Right, she don't need us anymore.
She did. We're going to have to check it out. I think it sounds pretty cool. Traveling with Kids. I don't know the name of the podcast yet. Do you guys know the name of it?
I don't off the top of my head.
I don't think it's been launched yet.
I'm going to get the name once it's fully launched, and we'll definitely have to pass that along to all of our listeners.
I think it'll be a great topic. I think it'll be one that we'll actually want to actually listen to and have some giggles with, right? But we're here at 10 seconds here, so Rich, start thinking about your last word. Find us on Facebook at the podcast without a name or one with legs, at No Name Podcaster on Twitter. We're on SoundCloud, Spreaker, iTunes, Google Play, Google Podcasts. We're everywhere. Rich, you have the last word now.
Disembogue. It means to emerge or pour out.